Ladies and gentlemen, I have just given President Bush a full report of our meeting today. I told him that Minister Aziz and I had completed a serious and extended diplomatic conversation in an effort to find a political solution to the crisis in the Gulf. I met with Minister Aziz today not to negotiate, as we have made clear we would not do, that is, negotiate backwards from United Nations Security Council resolutions, but I met with him today to communicate. And communicate means listening as well as talking. And we did that, both of us. The message that I conveyed from President Bush and our coalition partners was that Iraq must either comply with the will of the international community and withdraw peacefully from Kuwait or be expelled by force. Regrettably, ladies and gentlemen, I heard nothing today that, in over 6 hours, I heard nothing that suggested to me any Iraqi flexibility whatsoever on complying with the United Nations Security Council resolutions. There have been too many Iraqi miscalculations. The Iraqi government miscalculated the international response to the invasion of Kuwait, expecting the world community to stand idly by while Iraqi forces systematically pillaged a peaceful neighbor. It miscalculated the response, I think, to the barbaric policy of holding thousands of foreign hostages, thinking that somehow cynically doling them out a few at a time would somehow win political advantage. And it miscalculated that it could divide the international community and gain something thereby from its aggression. So let us hope that Iraq does not miscalculate again. The Iraqi leadership must have no doubt that the 28 nations which have deployed forces to the Gulf in support of the United Nations have both the power and the will to evict Iraq from Kuwait. If it should choose, and the choice is Iraq's, if it should choose to continue its brutal occupation of Kuwait, Iraq will be choosing a military confrontation which it cannot win and which will have devastating consequences for Iraq. I made these points with Minister Aziz not to threaten, but to inform, and I did so with no sense of satisfaction, for we genuinely desire a peaceful outcome, and as both President Bush and I have said on many occasions, the people of the United States have no quarrel with the people of Iraq. I simply wanted to leave as little room as possible for yet another tragic miscalculation by the Iraqi leadership. And I would suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, that this is still a confrontation that Iraq can avoid. The path of peace remains open, and that path is laid out very clearly in 12 United Nations Security Council resolutions adopted over a period of over 5 months. But now the choice lies with the Iraqi leadership. The choice really is theirs to make, and let us all hope that that leadership will have the wisdom to choose the path of peace. Jim, and then Barry.
What happens next? What do your allies plan to do next to bring this message home?
Well, you say, what do the allies plan to do next? And I think it's important for everyone to note that this is a coalition. This is not Iraq versus the United States. This is Iraq versus the international community. This happens to have been the first time that we've had an opportunity to find agreement on meeting U.S. and Iraq. So I don't know what the next steps are, Jim. I do know this, that time is running on, as I said a day or so ago. After 5 months and 12 United Nations Security Council resolutions, it seems to me that it is almost evident that the time for talk is running out. It's time for Iraq to act, and to act quickly by getting out of Kuwait. But this is a coalition, and we are seeking to implement solemn resolutions of the United Nations. And so perhaps there may be a way that the Secretary General of the United Nations could use his good offices here in the remaining 6 or so days that we have left. I will say that I've already mentioned that I didn't hear anything that to me demonstrated flexibility. Nor did I hear any new proposals. But I would like to take note of the fact that the minister did restate their proposal that the United States pick a day for him to come to the United States, and Iraq pick a day for me to go to Baghdad. Those of you who have been traveling with us know what our answer is to that. We've given it over the past 4 or 5 days, and I gave it to the minister tonight. We offered 15 separate days for a visit to Baghdad. The president of the United States made the proposal for face-to-face discussions. We are glad that Iraq accepted this one because we did have 6 hours during which we could make our position known to them. They could make their position known to us. But as far as next steps are concerned, it seems to me that because we are talking about a coalition and we are talking about implementing resolutions of the United Nations, that perhaps there could be, I don't know what the position of the government of Iraq would be on this, but perhaps there would be some room for us to seek the use of the good offices of the Secretary General of the United Nations. Barry?
Mr. Secretary, did the Iraqi foreign minister reiterate his demands for what he calls justice and fairness for the Palestinians? And was there any wavering in the U.S. position, as you may have expressed it to him, that the two issues are not related or not linked?
No, there was, he expressed his position. There was no change in our position, which is that the two issues are not linked. I did make the point that I don't think many people believe that Iraq invaded Kuwait in order to help the Palestinians. And if they did, it was another miscalculation because it hadn't helped the Palestinians. I think most people believe that Iraq invaded Kuwait for Iraq's own aggrandizement. And I think most people realize that Iraq is trying to use the Palestinian issue to shield its aggression against Kuwait, which in my view at least remains an obstacle to broader peace in the region rather than a catalyst for achieving that broader peace. And I made the point as well that rewarding Iraq's aggression with a link to the Arab-Israeli peace process would really send a terrible signal, not only to genuine peacemakers in the region, but also to other would-be aggressors at what we think is a defining moment in history. Bill?
Secretary, are you willing, is the United States willing, to talk again to Iraq before the January 15th deadline? And did you discuss with the President the possibility that you may still go to Baghdad?
I had already discussed that with President Bush, and I had already told you what our view was, and the President himself, I think, said there will be no trip to Baghdad. The proposal which he originally made was, in effect, rejected by Iraq. We offered 15 separate days. They continued to insist upon only one, the 12th of January, which we think was and still is an obvious effort to avoid the deadline of of January the 15th, and we're not interested in that. We think this deadline is real, and our coalition partners think the deadline is real.
Mr. Secretary,
I reported fully to the president, of course.
Could you run through for us? You spoke for 6 hours. Could you give us a sense of how the discussions evolved over those 6 hours? What did you begin with? What did he counter with? Why did you feel it necessary after 2 hours to call the president?
Well, we broke for lunch, and I think this is meeting is sufficiently important that I should call the president, and so I did. Just as I did as soon as we were finished.
Did you begin reading your letter?
But I began by saying that I was here to not to negotiate, but to communicate, as I've just told you. That I was here for a serious dialogue in an effort to find a political and peaceful solution, but that they should not expect that we would be prepared to walk backwards from UN Security Council resolutions, that the terms of those resolutions had already been set. And I told the minister I wanted to handle the meeting in whatever way he wanted. And I gave him the choice, and he chose for me to go first, just as I gave him the choice as well as to how to report to you, and he suggested that I come down here first. So that's how we got where we are here tonight. But let me say that I talked to him about how we saw the situation, about the history of the Security Council resolutions, about what I thought could happen in the event of observance of those resolutions, and what I feared would happen in the event of Iraq's non-observance of those resolutions. He then presented the position of the government of Iraq, and he will be down here in a few moments, and he can, now we can't run through 6 hours of dialogue here, and nobody else will get to ask any questions.
How detailed were you about the extent of force that would be used against Iraq if it does not comply with the UN resolutions by January 15th?
Well, I didn't give, I didn't get into things that, that would properly be in the realm of operational security matters. I hope I effectively made the case with respect to what at least our opinion was of the 28-nation multinational force that is there in the Gulf. Now let's go over here to Craig.
Mr. Secretary, is the United States interested in any sort of phased withdrawal, be it one supervised by the United Nations? And if this withdrawal begins by January 15th, will the United States guarantee there will be no military attack on Iraq?
Let me say, I should have said this in answer to Tom's question. I assured the minister that if they implement the United Nations resolutions, and if they withdraw from Iraq and permit the from Kuwait and permit the restoration of the legitimate government of Kuwait, that I could assure him that there would be no military action by the United States, and that I felt that there would, under those circumstances, be no military action by any other elements of the international coalition. On the first question, the United Nations resolutions speak for themselves. We are not here, after all. We are part of an international coalition. We are part of 28 countries, even more countries that have been helping financially and economically. And it is not up to us to walk backwards from solemn resolutions of the United Nations. John?
Mr. Secretary?
Yeah, I'll call on you in 1 minute.
Mr. Secretary, you have said in the past that you would seek approval for the use of force at the highest levels. Are you now at that stage in the process in which you will be seeking the use of force from other governments?
No, but the clock is ticking on, John, and I made that point to the minister today. As far as we are concerned, we have not taken the President of the United States, who alone under alone in our executive branch under our system can make that decision has not taken that decision. And I'm not aware that any other governments have. Yes, sir.
Mr. Secretary, in the remaining 6 days before the UN deadline, would you welcome an initiative by some other European allies or even Arab countries such as Algeria that would perhaps include sending a European foreign minister to Baghdad to seek a peaceful resolution?
Well, this is an international coalition. Let me say it one more time. And therefore, as I've just indicated to you, it's an international coalition seeking to implement solemn resolutions of the world's peacekeeping and security body. And therefore, there might, it seems to me, be some useful purpose served by perhaps the Secretary General, Secretary General's good offices. But I said last night, and I have said for months, we welcome any and all diplomatic efforts to solve this crisis peacefully and politically. We want it solved peacefully and politically. I'm disappointed, of course, that we did not receive any indications today whatsoever of any flexibility in the position of Iraq. So we would welcome any and all diplomatic efforts. We do think if there are efforts by members of the international coalition that the message should be uniform as it has been for 5 months and it should not be a mixed message. But we want a peaceful and political solution. Yes, Mary.
Mr. Secretary, can you tell us, you keep saying you saw no indication of flexibility. Did the foreign minister actually tell you that Iraq intends to keep Kuwait and will not withdraw from Kuwait?
He did not make that statement, but he did not indicate that there was any chance that they would withdraw, Mary. But I did not see, frankly, any flexibility in their position. Right, you can ask him questions when he gets down here. Ralph?
Mr. Secretary, did you discuss in answer to any of the discussion about the problems raised elsewhere in the Middle East by the Iraqi foreign minister, did you discuss the efforts the United States has made in the past to seek Arab-Israeli peace?
Yes.
To persuade Iraq that the United States was serious, genuinely interested in resolving those problems?
Yes, we went through the... We went through a good bit of the history of the personal efforts that I made for 14 months to bring about a dialogue between between Palestinians and Israelis. We went through the experience of the United States in bringing about the Camp David Accords and in bringing about peace between Israel and Egypt. And we had a full discussion of that issue, a complete discussion of it. I want to make it clear that I made it very clear throughout that there would be no linkage here of that issue to Iraq's withdrawal from Kuwait, and we would not agree as a condition of their withdrawing to any subsequent specific steps to be taken with respect to that. But we did have, they brought it up, and we had a very full discussion.
What was the
disagree. We frankly disagree.
President Bush is holding a news conference at 2:30 Eastern time. As we mentioned, President Bush is scheduled to hold a news conference at 2:30 Eastern time. He has talked extensively with Secretary of State Baker, and we'll see what news comes out of that. Let's go back to Secretary of State Baker.
And it would jeopardize future peace in the region. Mark?
Mr. Secretary, what did you tell the foreign minister about the willingness of the American people to go to war and the impact of political pressure on the president's decision-making?
I said, don't miscalculate the resolve of the American people, who are very slow to anger, but who believe strongly in principle, and who believe that we should not reward aggression, and that big countries with powerful military machines should not be permitted to invade, occupy, and brutalize their peaceful neighbors. Chris.
Mr. Secretary, you've told us what you didn't hear. You didn't hear any flexibility, and you told us that there was quite a bit of discussion of history. Could you tell us what you did hear? Did you hear justifications from the foreign minister? Did you hear a repeat of what they've been saying in public for some time?
I heard some things that I quite frankly find very hard to believe, but I'll let him go into the detail here. But I heard, for instance, that their action in invading Kuwait was defensive in nature, that they were being threatened by Kuwait, and I will tell you the same thing I told the minister, which is I find it very hard to believe that any nation in the world will believe that. David?
Mr. Secretary, even though you did spend 6 hours here today talking to Foreign Minister Aziz, in the past 5.5 months you haven't had much contact with Iraq. What's to prevent the historians of this conflict from concluding that there was a failure of diplomacy here? We slid toward war without trying.
Well, there's been a lot of conversations with the leadership of Iraq, all to no avail. The Secretary General's already had one failed mission. There have been any number of Arab efforts to solve this crisis, all to no avail. There have been efforts by other Western governments. The Soviet Union has tried very hard. They've had meetings. We have now had a meeting. And so, you know, people can write whatever they decide they might want to write. But the truth of the matter is, we have been very, I think, the international coalition, very responsible and measured in our approach to this. We have not, as some might suggest, gone off half-cocked. We have gone through the United Nations patiently, working for consensus within the Security Council. And it is only after 5.5 months and the passage of 12 Security Council resolutions that we find ourselves at the point use of force, David. So I think that there's been more diplomacy exercised in this crisis than in almost any that I can think of. And the one thing I would ask you all not to do is to equate diplomacy and appeasement. We made that mistake in the 30s. At least for our part, we don't intend to make it again. Saul?
In a sense, two questions. Did the foreign minister suggest Iraq might withdraw from Kuwait if there were linkage, as let us say the French have suggested or others have suggested? And if he did, is linkage, the principle of linkage, a reason for the loss of, and the insistence on that principle, a reason for the loss of lots of lives?
Well, I don't think he said that explicitly, Saul. I think perhaps it was implicit in his comments, but he'll be here, and you can ask him. But it's more than just the principle of linkage, as I understand their position. There would have to be agreement to conferences and that sort of thing that get you beyond just the simple fact of linkage. Margaret?
Mr. Secretary, did Minister Aziz make a specific proposal under which Iraq would get out of Kuwait, however unacceptable it was to you? Was there a specific proposal?
No. There was no specific proposal. He restated the positions that Iraq has stated publicly in the past. He defended their action in invading and occupying Kuwait. He explained how he feels that was justified. And again, he'll be down here and you can ask him yourself. Susan?
Mr. Secretary, made it clear that you were not going to Baghdad, but did you and the foreign minister talk about future diplomatic contacts at your level between the United States and Iraq? Or did this 1 6.5 hour meeting represent the conclusion of diplomatic initiatives by the United States?
Well, we will maintain our diplomatic contacts through our charge in Baghdad until the 12th of January. I asked for and received the personal assurance of the minister that Joe Wilson and the four other Americans in our embassy there will be permitted to leave Baghdad on the 12th of January. and will not be restrained from so doing. Yes, Warren.
Mr. Secretary, your mood, if I may say, seems pretty somber at this point. Can you kind of describe your state of mind and your mood after what has occurred today?
Somber.
Somber.
You got it.
You're advising an evacuation?
I'm not saying that. I'm telling you that we are that we have received, we have asked for and received assurances for our remaining five diplomatic personnel to leave on the 12th of January, which is a date that you well know is very close to the January 15 deadline and happens to be the date that Iraq has been insisting on for 3 weeks for the meeting.
What about other Americans, sir?
Well, I think most all Americans are out of Iraq. All that want to leave are gone, as far as I know. Joanna?
Mr. Secretary, can you tell us now about the letter from President Bush? Was it, in fact, in Arabic? What was the tone of it? Did it contain graphic military scenarios intended to intimidate?
I regret to inform you, Joanna, that the minister chose not to receive the letter from President Bush. He read it very slowly and very carefully, but he would not accept it, nor would the Iraqi embassy in Washington accept an Arabic courtesy translation. You will have to ask the minister why he did not accept the letter. My own opinion, for what it's worth, and it's only an opinion, was that he came here not authorized to accept a letter that walked away from the United Nations resolutions, which is something that we cannot and, of course, will not do. Yes, sir.
Have you discussed the possibility of convening the United Nations again to discuss the Gulf crisis? You know that President Mitterrand, he has proposed that most probably a new discussion is possible. It might be helpful. Have you discussed this eventuality with the Iraqi minister?
No, it did not come up in my meeting today with the Iraqi minister. I did speak to that question and that issue a day or so ago, and I believe that President Bush has spoken to it as well. I don't know what an additional Security Council meeting at this stage could do, because what we are talking about here is faithful implementation of resolutions of the Council, the last one of which says that if Iraq does not withdraw by midnight on January the 15th, force can be used to effect that withdrawal. We have had 12 resolutions of the United Nations Security Council.
Suggesting this?
I can't answer your question. I would refer you to President Mitterrand, but I have just said that perhaps there would be some utility in trying to use the good offices of the Secretary General. Bob.
Secretary, do you have any reason to believe that there's any way to avoid a war as of right now?
Yes, I hope there is. There's been no decision taken for that eventuality, and I would simply refer you to my opening statement, where I made the point that I hope we do not have yet one more miscalculation by the government of Iraq. I would also refer you to the statements which President Bush and I and other members of the coalition have made over the course of the last several days or weeks, and which I repeated today to the minister, again, not in a threatening way, but simply so that he would know where our head is and how we feel and what we think, and that is that this January 15th deadline in our minds is real. Iraq can choose to believe that or not, but it is real in our minds and in the minds of our coalition partners. We hope that they will believe that we think it's real and that they will act to implement the solemn resolutions of the United Nations. Yes, sir, right here.
Mr. Secretary, okay. Would you regret that you would have still liked to go even in the 12th and meet, instead of Mr. Tariq, Saddam himself
Still difference of 3 days.
The 12th, we've said for the last 3 weeks, the 12th of January was unacceptable to us because it is just an effort to avoid the deadline. It's obvious. That's why the 12th was originally suggested. We've said for a long time that date is unacceptable to us. It remains unacceptable to us. John?
Mr. Secretary, did you spell out your vision of what the Gulf would look like if they withdrew peacefully? In other words, some of the restrictions that you have talked about that must be imposed upon Iraq, even if they did withdraw. Did you lay that plan out for him in some way?
Yes, I did in my original presentation this morning, John, and I don't have time to go through all of that with you now, but that falls right in the category of the assurance that there would not be military force used against Iraq by the United States if they withdrew from Kuwait and permitted the restoration of the legitimate government of Kuwait.
Did you talk about the nuclear weapons, the chemical weapons, the size of the Iraqi military, things that are a concern to many in the Western coalition beyond the occupation of Kuwait?
We had a full discussion of the questions of questions about weapons of mass destruction. I pointed out the interest of the United States as we've expressed before in addressing that issue and addressing that subject. And we talked about the presence, the multinational presence there, and the fact that President Bush has said that we do not desire nor want a permanent military ground presence in the Middle East, in the Gulf, that we are not. We want to see our troops come home just as fast as the security situation will allow. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we discussed, as you might expect. Right back there,
Mr. Secretary, could you just please describe to us the point at which the meeting broke off? Why and how did it happen? Was it that you finished off? Did Mr. Cease finish off? Was there just nothing to talk about anymore? Please describe that.
Well, it was simply a case, I think, that after over 6 hours of discussion, we both had pretty well made the points that we had come to make, and that was it. I don't believe that there was anything left unsaid. He said everything I think he came to say, and I had said everything that I had come to say. So, I think, frankly, it lasted longer than many of you might have anticipated at the beginning. Yes, sir.
Mr. Secretary, you mentioned that you are going to call back this American diplomats. Will you also ask the Iraqi diplomats to leave the United States on January the 12th?
No, we will ask the Iraqi government to draw down their diplomatic presence in the United States on the 12th. But as I indicated to the minister, we would be willing to permit the presence of a small diplomatic contingent in Washington. Yes.
Mr. Secretary, do you feel that if you would have accepted the fact of the linkage, there could have been a proposition of Iraq retiring from Kuwait?
I don't know. Why don't you ask the minister that? Because when you say accepted linkage, I'm not entirely sure exactly what you mean. Do you mean if we had indicated a willingness to go to an international conference to handle the question of the Middle East? Ask him the question. It would be very interesting. You know what our position has been for a long time. It would set an extraordinarily unfortunate precedent, we think, and that would not in the long run contribute to peace in the region, but would contribute to instability because aggressors would be seen to be rewarded for their aggression. Something we simply cannot consider. Norm?
Mr. Secretary, was there any single issue on which the difference between the United States and Iraq was narrowed during the 6.5 hours?
Well, let me say that I think that the discussion, as I've already indicated, was a serious one. I think that the tone of it was good, Norm, under as good as you could expect under the circumstances. We weren't pounding the table and shouting at each other. It was a very reasoned and, I think, responsible discussion by two diplomats who really would like to find a peaceful and political solution to this problem. But I've already said to you, I did not detect flexibility in the position of Iraq, as they have stated it over the past several days. Now we, again, I invite you to my opening statement. We still have 6 days. I just hope that they will think about this meeting, that they will focus on it, that when Foreign Minister Aziz gets back and reports to his president, that perhaps there could be some change in their position. But there cannot be a negotiation here because the terms of the United Nations Security Council resolutions were worked out in the debate in the United Nations. And the international coalition is bound to those resolutions. One last question, is that? Yes.
Mr. Secretary, would you be willing to meet Saddam somewhere else apart from Baghdad? If you, and was that?
That was not discussed. It has never been proposed by Iraq. The Iraqi proposal, as you know, for some weeks has been, we pick a date for Baker to come to Baghdad. You pick a date for Aziz to come to Washington, and we'll work it that way. That's been out there for a long, long time. There's never been any suggestion of the other. Thank you.
So a rather bleak scenario spelled out by Secretary of State Baker, who is now leaving the meeting room in the Geneva Hotel. He said that we have heard nothing that would indicate flexibility on Iraq's part in this crisis. We are now set to enact the solemn resolutions of the United Nations. There is still 6 days to go, however, in this situation. Ralph Begleiter is standing by, as he has been throughout most of this day. Ralph, did you hear anything encouraging in this rather bleak statement?
I have never heard in the extent of my diplomatic coverage career a press conference as negative as this one. There was virtually no good news in the report Secretary of State Baker has given on his talks with Iraqi Foreign Minister Tariq Aziz. Just some of the mechanics of the situation illustrate it. The United States will withdraw all of its remaining diplomats from Iraq in just a few days on January 12th. The United States is not cutting off relations with Iraq. The United States says Iraq may remain, keep a small diplomatic contingent in Washington. Perhaps most severely of all, Secretary Baker reported that Tariq Aziz did not even receive President Bush's letter, a letter which he said Aziz read carefully and slowly, but rejected, and the Iraqi embassy in Washington also rejected the letter from President Bush. Mr. Baker also said, as you pointed out, Don, that there was no flexibility whatsoever. That was Baker's word in the presentation made to him by Tariq Aziz, the Iraqi foreign minister. He said he had no sense of satisfaction whatsoever as a result of these talks. He says he still thinks this is a confrontation Iraq can avoid. And when offered the opportunity to say whether war was inevitable in the Gulf, he indicated he does not think so. He still thinks there is a way to get out of it. But he warned Saddam Hussein in his opening statement, Secretary Baker did, that Iraq has miscalculated many times in the past and should not do so again.
Secretary Baker was a bit late in his press conference, and then I hear that President Bush intends to have a press conference. I prefer to listen to him. Then I was told that the press conference of the President Bush has been postponed for a while, so I wanted to use the time to talk to you. When I arrived last night in Geneva, I said that I have come with open-mindedness. And that was my intention. And I also came in good faith. The most important fact about these talks I would like to draw your attention to is that they are taking place after 5 months of the occurrence of the latest events in the Gulf. And I draw the attention of Secretary Baker to that important fact. Also, that this meeting took place after the last resolution that was taken under American pressure by the Security Council, which makes limits to diplomacy. If we had an earlier opportunity several months ago, I told the Secretary that we might have been able to remove a lot of misunderstandings between us if there was a chance or there is a chance for that. Because he spoke at length about his government's assumptions of miscalculations by Iraq. And when I came to that point, I made it clear to him that we have not made miscalculations. We are very well aware of the situation. We have been very well aware of the situation from the very beginning. And I told him that we have heard a lot of talk on his side and on the side of President Bush that the Iraqis have not got the message. They don't know what's going around them, etc. You know what they have been saying in this regard. I told him, if we had met several months ago, I would have told you that we do know everything. We know what the deployment of your forces in the region mean. We know what the resolutions you imposed on the Security Council mean. And we know all the facts about the situation, the political facts, the military facts, and the other facts. So talking about miscalculation is incorrect. We have to convey to each other our view about the situation, and that removes the misunderstandings on either side. I heard Secretary Baker describing our meeting in form, and I say also that from the professional point of view, it was a serious meeting. We both listened to each other very carefully. We both gave each other enough time to explain the views we wanted to explain, to convey the information we wanted to convey. From this aspect, about this aspect in the talks, I am satisfied. But we had grave or big differences about the issues we addressed. Mr. Baker reiterated the very well-known American position. He is interested in one question only, that's the situation in the Gulf, and Security Council resolutions about that situation. I told him very clearly, and I repeated my idea and explained it at length, that what is at stake in our region is peace, security, and stability. What's at stake is the fate of the whole region. That region which has been suffering from wars, instabilities, hardships for several decades. If you are ready to bring about peace to the region, comprehensive, lasting, just peace to the whole region of the Middle East, we are ready to cooperate. I told him I have no problem with the international legality. I have no problem with the principles of justice and fairness. On the contrary, those principles are in the best interest of the people of Iraq, and they are in the best interest of the Arab nation. We have been seeking for decades to have those principles respected and implemented in our region, but they have not been respected and implemented by the Israelis, and in that they have got a continuous strong American support. If the American administration changes its position and it works with us and with the other parties concerned in the region to bring about peace, comprehensive, lasting, just peace, we will be very glad and very enthusiastic to participate in that effort. Concerning the new world order or the international world order, I said I have no problem with that order, and we would love to be partners in that order. But that order has to be implemented justly and in all cases, not using that order in a single manner, in a selective manner, impose it on a certain case with the view of the United States of America and neglect the other issues and not show sincerity and seriousness about implementing it on other issues. He said that he does not believe that what happened on the 2nd of August and later was for the cause of the Palestinian question or to help the Palestinians. I explained to him the history of Iraq's interest in the Palestinian question. I explained to him that the Palestinian question is a matter of national security to Iraq. If the Palestinian question is not resolved, we do not feel secure in our country, because there have been wars in the past. Iraq participated in those wars. Israel attacked Iraq in 1981, and we were expecting Israeli attack. Expecting such an attack. And that was the main theme in the Arab summit that was held in Baghdad late May. Therefore, it is a matter of Iraqi security as well as Arab security to see that the Palestinian question is solved in a just manner, according to international legality, according to the principles of justice and fairness. He said he does not believe that. I told him, okay, test us. You can test us and see whether we are sincere in that or not. I spoke at length about the linkage between the issues in the region. And I told him that when we speak about the linkage, we are serious and sincere. Because what was happening before the 2nd of August has a strong relationship with what happened later. And I told him that the United States actually implemented embargo on Iraq before the 2nd of August. We had dealings with the United States in the field of foodstuff. We used to buy more than $1 billion of American products. And we were faithful and accurate in our dealing with the American relative institutions. Early in 1990, the American administration suspended that deal, which was profitable to both sides. And we were denied food from the United States. Then the United States government decided to deny Iraq the purchase of a very large list of items. That was done also by the British government and other Western governments. So the boycott was there before the 2nd of August. The threat to the security of Iraq was there before the 2nd of August. The threat to the Palestinians was there before that date. The threat to the security of Jordan was there before that date. And that was, as I said, the main themes in the Baghdad summit, which took place late May. So if you want to bring about the situation in the region to that period, prior to the 2nd of August, that means that we will be threatened, we will be boycotted, and the political and psychological and media campaign against us would continue. So what's the difference? What's the difference? If we have to change the course of events, if we have to bring about peace, let us address all the issues. If the matter is the implementation or the respect of the international organization, the respect of Security Council resolutions, we have a number of resolutions about the Palestinian question. They have been neglected for decades. The last two important resolutions, 242 and 338, the first was adopted in 1967, the other in 1973, and they are not yet implemented. And the United States and the members of the coalition, as Mr. Baker calls it, have not sent